Richard II, Makers of History, by Jacob Abbott. Preface. King Richard II lived in the days when the chivalry of feudal times was in all its glory. His father, the Black Prince, his uncles, the sons of Edward III, and his ancestors in a long line, extending back to the days of Richard I, were among the most illustrious knights of Europe in those days, and their history abounds in the wonderful exploits, the narrow escapes, and the romantic adventures for which the knights-errant of the Middle Ages were so renowned. This volume takes up the story of English history at the death of Richard I, and continues it to the time of the deposition and death of Richard II, with a view of presenting as complete a picture as is possible, within such limits, of the ideas and principles, the manners and customs, and the extraordinary military undertakings and exploits of that wonderful age. End of preface. Chapter 1. Richard's Predecessors. There have been three monarchs of the name of Richard upon the English throne. Richard I is known and celebrated in history as Richard the Crusader. He was the sovereign ruler not only of England, but of all the Norman part of France, and from both of his dominions he raised a vast army, and went with it to the Holy Land, where he fought many years against the Saracens with a view of rescuing Jerusalem and the other holy places there from the dominion of unbelievers. He met with a great many remarkable adventures in going to the Holy Land, and with still more remarkable ones on his return home, all of which are fully related in the volume of this series entitled King Richard I. Richard II did not succeed Richard I immediately. Several reigns intervened. The monarch who immediately succeeded Richard I was John. John was Richard's brother, and had been left in command in England as regent during the king's absence in the Holy Land. After John came Henry III and the three Edwards, and when the third Edward died, his son Richard II was heir to the throne. He was, however, too young at that time to reign, for he was only 10 years old. The kings in these days were wild and turbulent men, always engaged in wars with each other and with their nobles, while all the industrial classes were greatly depressed. The nobles lived in strong castles in various places about the country, and owned, or claimed to own, very large estates, which the labouring men were compelled to cultivate for them. Some of these castles still remain in a habitable state, but most of them are now in ruins, and very curious objects the ruins are to see. The kings held their kingdoms very much as the nobles did their estates. They considered them theirs by right, and the people generally thought so too. The king had a right, as they imagined, to live in luxury and splendour, and to lord it over the country, and compel the mass of the people to pay him nearly all their earnings in rent and taxes, and to raise armies, whenever he commanded them, to go and fight for him in his quarrels with his neighbours, because his father had done these things before him. And what right had his father to do these things? Why, because his father had done them before him. Very well, but to go back to the beginning. What right had the first man to assume this power, and how did he get possession of it? This was a question that nobody could answer, for nobody knew then, and nobody knows now, who were the original founders of these noble families, or by what means they first came into power. People did not know how to read and write in the days when kings first began to reign, and so no records were made, and no accounts kept of public transactions, and when at length the countries of Europe in the Middle Ages began to emerge somewhat into the light of civilization, these royal and noble families were found everywhere established. The whole territory of Europe was divided into a great number of kingdoms, principalities, dukedoms, and other such sovereignties, over each of which some ancient family was established in supreme and almost despotic power. Nobody knew how they originally came by their power. The people generally submitted to this power very willingly. In the first place, they had a sort of blind veneration for it on account of its ancient and established character. Then they were always taught from infancy that kings had a right to reign, and nobles a right to their estates, and that to toil all their lives, and allow their kings and nobles to take, in rent and taxes, and in other such ways, everything that they, the people, earned, except what was barely sufficient for their subsistence, was an obligation which the God of nature had imposed upon them, and that it would be a sin in them not to submit to it. Whereas nothing can be more plain than that the God of nature intends the earth for man, and that consequently society ought to be so organized that in each generation every man can enjoy something at least like his fair share of the products of it, in proportion to the degree of industry or skill which he brings to bear upon the work.